Okay. Very good morning to all brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. So we had just finished our breakfast. Now we are having our morning chanting and reflection. So the morning chanting we have already covered. What we will do is I will go through some morning reflection with you. You turn to your chanting book, retreat version. We have a few of this reflection, which is very good. Reflection on sharing of blessings. Page 21. So this one, we will chant the English version so that you all can understand. So this reflection and recollection, leading to the reflection on sharing of blessing, is very important. This will open up our heart. When we reflect on all this wholesomeness and goodness that we have cultivated, we have developed, there is a lot of understanding, there is a lot of joy. And we are willing to share all this blessing and joy with all those people who have helped us with the causes and conditions for us to be able to receive all this. They include our teachers, our guide, our parents, and even the sun, the moon, and everything. So this is a very good reflection. Okay, page 21, retreat version. We will do the chanting. Then later on, I will also explain to you all how when you attend such retreat or spiritual activity, you will be able to develop a lot of wholesomeness. And this type of wholesomeness, you can't get it in your normal daily activity or life if you are not a cultivator. And together with whatever you do, you also get to perform the 10 meritorious actions, which are all very useful and very important for you to perfect your cultivation. And you can make use of all these merits, all this wholesomeness, together with all the understanding that you have developed. Then when you invoke power of merits for causes and conditions for you to progress along the path of Dhamma, it will have its own efficacy and potentness. It can bring about such thing. Okay, page 21. We chant together. Now let us chant the verse of sharing and aspiration to the goodness that arises from my practice. May my spiritual teacher and guide of great virtue, my mother, my father, and my relative, the sun and the moon, and all virtuous leader of the world, may the highest God and evil forces, celestial beings, guardian spirit of the earth and the lord of death, may those who are friendly, indifferent, or hostile, may all beings receive the blessing of my life. May they soon attain the threefold bliss and realize the deathless. Through the goodness that arises from my practice and through this act of sharing, may all desire and attachment and all harmful state of mind quickly cease until I realize Nibbana. In every kind of birth, may I have an upright mind with mindfulness and wisdom, austerity and vigor, may the force of delusion not take hold nor weaken my resolve. The Buddha is my excellent refuge, unsurpassed is the protection of the Dhamma. The solitary Buddha is my noble lord. The Sangha is my supreme support. Through the supreme power of all this, may darkness and delusion be dispelled. Then the other one is reflection on universal well-being. We also chant this. Now let us chant the reflection on universal well-being. May I abide in well-being, in freedom from affliction, in freedom from hostility, in freedom from ill will, in freedom from anxiety, and may I maintain well-being in myself. May everyone abide in well-being, in freedom from hostility, in freedom from ill will, in freedom from anxiety, and may they maintain well-being in themselves. May all beings be released from all suffering, and may they not be parted from the good fortune they have attained. When they act upon intention, all beings are the owner of their action and inherit its result. Their future is born of such action, companion to such action, and its result will be their home. All action with intention, be they skillful or harmful, of such act, they will be the heir. So this one is to remind us of karma. You take care of karma, you will have well-being. So with well-being, you should determine to be free from affliction. If you don't have wisdom, you can be subject to suffering or affliction. Then the well-being doesn't last. That's why you need the Dhamma. The Dhamma can free your mind. So you can wish for freedom from affliction, but without wisdom, it can never materialize. So similarly, freedom from hostility, without wisdom, it also cannot materialize. Then the third one is freedom from ill will, or getting angry and having unhappy mind states. The fourth one also very important, freedom from anxiety, which is a result of fear, worry, anxiety. So all these mind states are negative, so if you want to be free from them, you need to develop wisdom. Without wisdom, you can't be free. Then may I attain or maintain well-being in myself. So this type of physical well-being, mental well-being, can only materialize when you have developed the understanding of the Dhamma, the awakening, the wisdom needed to liberate your mind. So this part is very useful, very important. Sometimes when we radiate metta, if you radiate with understanding, then it's not parroting. Means you understand and you determine not to develop the negative emotion, because you have cultivated the right view with regards to law of karma, and you understand that we are all heir to our karma, born of our karma, conditioned and supported by our karma, and we are what we are because of our karma. So because of that, it is very important that we determine to take care of karma. And to do that, you have to follow the advice of the Buddha. That's why you have the famous Dhammapada verse 183. All Sammasambuddha, their advice are the same. All evil you have to avoid, that is to take care of karma. Then whatever wholesomeness you have to cultivate when there is condition for you to do it. Then the last one is meditate, be heedful. Purify your mind, develop the wisdom to free. If you do that, you will become beautiful. Your life will change. Your life will transform. your karma will become beautiful. Your karmic nature also will transform and lead to a lot of wholesomeness and understanding. So basically, these are very useful, important understanding. Okay, we can turn to a page. I want to share with you the Anatta Lakkhana Sutta. That one is very useful. Anatta Lakkhana Sutta is page 42. Thank you. So turn to page 42. So this one is on understanding anatta. This is a special discourse on the characteristics of anatta. Anatta is not just non-self. Non-self is just a small part of anatta. Anatta means it's not a permanent unchanging entity where you can cling on to, hold on to and say, this is me, this is I, therefore all this can be mine. Okay, page 43, the English version. Now we will go through. The first part I will read. Then later on, you all can join me together. The discourse on the characteristics of anatta. All beings should take pain to understand the characteristics of anatta, which is also sometimes translated as non-self, which provides meshless deliverance from the self-belief and self-perception. As taught by the Supreme Buddha, this teaching is given so that those who meditate on experiential reality may arrive at perfect comprehension. It is for the development of perfect understanding of this phenomenal world and for the investigation of all defiled mind moments. The consequence of this cultivation is total deliverance. So desirous of bringing this teaching forth with its great benefit, let us now recite this sutta. So before I recite this sutta, I will give you some background information. Immediately after his great enlightenment underneath the Bodhi tree, 2,000 over years ago, the Buddha actually spent 49 days reflecting and contemplating and experiencing a lot of the thing that he has realized. Then after that, he has this thought. What he has realized is so profound and so different. That's why he decided not to teach it to the world. Then one Brahma can read his mind and came down, pay respect and talk to the Buddha. He said, there are some with little dust on their eye that can understand your teaching. Please, Lord, share what you have realized with the world. Then the Buddha reflected. Then the Buddha realized, yeah, the two teachers that taught him, if they are still around, they will understand. So he reflected. They passed away already. Then he reflected on the five ascetic, the monk that followed him last time to meditate. Then they realized, he realized they are still searching far away. But he knew where they are, so he went and met up with them. And the first sermon that he taught to the five ascetic was this, what they call Dhammacakka Pavattana Sutta. The first turning of the wheel of life. So that first sermon, Dhammacakka Pavattana Sutta, the Buddha explained the Four Noble Truths, which is the essence of his teaching, and the three turning that lead to the three types of corresponding wisdom. When that sutta was being proclaimed, one of the five ascetics became a sotapan, Kondanya, Venerable Kondanya, before the sutta even finished. somewhere towards the end, he became a Sotapan. That's why in the Sutta you read, the eye of wisdom has been realized by Kandanya. And after that, the Buddha followed with this Anatta Lakkhana Sutta, the Sutta on Anatta. And do you know what happened when he went through this Sutta? All the five ascetic become Arahant. So now I go through with you, see how many of you become Arahant. So you listen, hey, it's possible, it's not impossible, and this is not difficult, but you must have Parami. So I will read to you. Thus have I heard at one time the Blessed One was dwelling in Benares at Isipatana in the Deer Park. There he addressed a group of five bhikkhu. Those who went to India before the India trip, you would have visited this place, Benares, Isipatana. This is where the first sermon was proclaimed. The Buddha started by telling the monk, the five aggregate form, bhikkhu, is anatta. If bhikkhu form were self, means a permanent unchanging entity, then form would not lead to affliction. Can you understand and agree on that? If it's self, means something that you own, you control, then it will not lead to affliction. You can tell the body and the mind, I want you to be always well, will not have suffering. But since it's anatta, not a permanent and changing entity, depend on condition, it becomes affected. That's why he say form is anatta. If form were self, then the Buddha say, one might be able to say in regards to form, let my form be thus, let my form not be thus. But since bhikkhu, form is non-self or anatta, or not a permanent unchanging entity, form therefore leads to affliction. And you have seen it in life. You cannot have control over your body. The body can go the way of nature. It will decay, it will grow old, it will get sick, and it will even one day die. So that's the reason why the Buddha said, let my form be thus, let my form not be thus. But it doesn't obey you. And similarly, he repeat for feeling. Feeling is anatta. If bhikkhu, feeling were self, or a permanent unchanging entity, feeling would not lead to suffering, affliction. And one might be able to say in regards to feeling, let my feeling be thus, let my feeling not be thus. But since bhikkhu, feeling is anatta, feeling therefore leads to affliction. And one is not able to say with regards to feeling, let my feeling be thus, let my feeling not be thus. So he repeat the same for perception, sankhara and vijnana. Turn to the next page. Then after that he asked, what do you think, bhikkhu? Is form permanent or impermanent? What do you think? Is your physical body or external form permanent or impermanent? Definitely it's impermanent, isn't it? Because you can see it changing. Depend on condition, it will arise. When condition change, it will change. That's why you will grow old. Everything will decay. Even this table, sooner or later it will decay. When condition change, it will also cease to be. So everything that you come to perceive within the conditioned world has this type of characteristics, the characteristics of impermanent. So because of that, the bhikkhu replied, impermanent Lord. Then the Buddha continued, this one you have to listen. But is that which is impermanent, painful, or pleasurable. Yeah? If it's impermanent, what do you think? Is it painful or pleasurable? Well, you cannot have it forever, understand or not? It's going to change. Sooner or later, it will lead you to all those reality that you have to go through. Just like this physical body, your loved one, they will get old, get sick, and one day die. Maybe because of certain condition, death can be any time. It doesn't wait for you. Doesn't mean your life expectancy, average 75 or 76, you will live that long. No. Sometimes people die very young. You can't predict. So because of that, the Buddha asked the bhikkhu, and the bhikkhu say, painful, Lord. So after that, the Buddha conclude and tell the monk, is it fit to consider that which is impermanent, painful, of a nature to change? As this is mine, I am this, this is self, this is really me. That's why the monk replied, it is not, Lord. Then he repeat for feeling, he repeat for perception, then he repeat for sankhara, and finally consciousness. Then turn the next page. Therefore, bhikkhu, whatever form there is, whether past, present, or future, internal or external, gross or subtle, inferior or superior, whether it is far or near, all form should by means of right wisdom, right understanding, be seen as it really is. Thus, this is not mine, this is, I am not this, this is not a permanent unchanging entity, self. Then he repeat for feeling, perception, mental formation, and consciousness. Then he conclude, seeing in this way, bhikkhu, the wise noble disciple becomes disenchanted with form. Means you will not get yourself deluded by the phenomenal world of form. Be disenchanted with feeling, perception, mental formation, or sankhara, or mind state, and become disenchanted with consciousness. Becoming disenchanted, their passion fade away, means their craving, their desire fade away. With the fading of passion or desire, the heart is liberated. With liberation, there comes knowledge. It is liberated. And they know, destroy is birth. The holy life has been lived out. Done is what has to be done. There is no coming into any state of being. Thus spoke the Buddha, the Blessed One. Delighted, the group of five ascetics rejoice in what the Lord has said. Moreover, while the discourse were being delivered, the mind of the five bhikkhu were free from defilement, through clinging no more. That's why they all become arahant. But a easier way to understand the five aggregate is not self and not real, is through what I have reflected and contemplated. Because when I meditate, then I check. Is the physical body me? Of course, the Buddha's statement of this one is anatta, because if it's not anatta, if it's self, it will not lead to affliction. That one helps a lot. But I further reflect and contemplate, and I ask myself, the physical body is just the four element. There is no knowing. So how can it be me? Do you understand? When it dies, what happens? The consciousness is not inside. You can do post-mortem, it can rot, it can decay, and yet there is no feeling, nothing. So it's just element going the way of nature. That's why form is anatta, not a permanent unchanging entity, which you cannot say, this is me, this is I, because they are only element. Then I realize this is easier to understand, and this is very profound. Then I went to the other aggregate. Then I checked, apart from what the Buddha said, then I checked. Is feeling me? Is feeling permanent? Is feeling really what living being think? Then when I meditate, I relax, I silent, aware. Then I realize feeling can be conditioned into emotion through wrong thought, through wrong view, through the mundane mind that stir and react. We are like and dislike. Then I check. If feeling is impermanent, it can just change, can be conditioned into emotion, then how can feeling be me? Do you understand? When feeling, the pure feeling, change into pleasant feeling, the I die. I didn't die. Either. Then when pleasant feeling cease, and another condition create unpleasant feeling, again that feeling come and go, and yet I didn't die. So how can feeling be me? If feeling is me, when that feeling pass away, I should die with it, isn't it? True or not? Huh? So definitely feeling cannot be you. Similarly, perception. One moment I perceive this, next moment I perceive that. So perception also come and go, and yet I didn't die. Then I check sankhara, all the mind state, whether it's meditative, good mind state, or during the daily life when you are deluded with the three evil roots, anger, hatred, envy, jealousy, craving, lust, desire, all this sankhara mind state, they arise and they pass away, and I didn't die. Even like anger and fear, I realize through meditation they are dependent originating, condition arising. They were never intrinsic within my mind. So how can it be real? How can it be me? So likewise for consciousness, one moment seeing consciousness, next moment hearing consciousness. So consciousness come and go, and yet I didn't die. Then who am I? What am I? If the five aggregate of form and mind are not me, why did they arise in me? That's how I meditate. That's how I inquire. That's how I develop the understanding and the wisdom to free. Then I realize from the past, carried to this life, that all these are not real, exactly according to the Heart Sutta. This is the Dhamma that the Buddha is trying to teach us, trying to advise us. So when my understanding unfolds, then my mind becomes different. Then it starts to develop the straightening of view. It starts to understand things differently. Then it doesn't attach to the five aggregate of form and mind anymore. Then I came to realize this five aggregate of form and mind, the human being, this is karmically conditioned out for us to come to this universe, to this existential world, to live life. So we have to make use of this. So I always give an analogy as this human being is just like a vehicle and a tool for us to come to this existential world to use. A vehicle in the sense that this physical body, you look at our analogy of the car and the driver. Okay? The car takes you around, move around. The driver is the one that drives the car. So likewise, when it's inside our body, there is a mind that instructs this body to move. When you understand that, then you say, yeah, so the body is like a vehicle. Take me around. Wherever I want to go, the mind direct and it will go, provided the condition is there. If this body like the car, no problem, then you can drive it. You can instruct it to go, you can walk, you can run, you can do what you want. But if there is problem, let's say paralysis from the waist downward, you ask him to stand, he cannot stand. You ask him to walk, he cannot walk. It's just like the car. When certain parts are down, even the driver is very good. Formula One driver, F1 driver, he cannot drive anymore. Or when the car is without fuel, or some of the vital connecting circuit is down. Then I realize it's the same. It's for me to use. That's why I say this is the vehicle. Then the mind is a tool for me to use. So I use it with wisdom, with understanding. I will not go and worry about it, getting old, getting sick and die, where this is not me. And I use it to live. It's so beautiful. It served me. So with this understanding, I know how to use the form and mind to live life. Then every moment of consciousness, the second aspect of the five degree of form and mind, I saw it very clearly. Then I check the teaching, dependent on origin. Yeah, what the Buddha teaches is correct. Dependent on ignorance, mental activity arises. And during that time, your mind makes contact with the brain. That's why the brain is an organ. Then it gives rise to mental consciousness. Vijnanam. Then after that you input the content of consciousness, it becomes the thought, the five degree of form and mind. That's how it arises. Then because of that, there must be sense basis, otherwise nothing can arise. So when there is sense basis, there is contact. When there is contact, there is feeling. When there is delusion, feeling will be conditioned into craving. But when there is wisdom, feeling remains as pure feeling. So straightforward, so simple. That's how the Dhamma can help you free your mind, deliver your mind. So this is how the five ascetic become enlightened, become arahant, because they know the five aggregate of form and mind is impermanent, lead to suffering. This is nature's law. Understanding this law, free your mind, liberate your mind. And this is non-self, anatta, not a permanent unchanging entity. That's why you will not be deceived anymore. You will not cling, you will not hold. And when you are free of that delusion, you can live life beautifully. You just make use of it. Because there are conditions for its arising. Then there are conditions for it to cease. The supporting condition that maintain this form and mind or the human being to be animated and become like a living being alive. You know them, the three conditions is stated in the blue book, Understanding the Heart and Mind. I explain them all inside. Go back and read through it, then you understand. Okay, so this reflection I think is good enough today. You can rejoice. Sadhu, sadhu. Sadhu. Okay, now is 9 o'clock. So you're supposed to have 1.5 hours of meditation, minimum 60 minutes of formal sitting, then the balance 15 or 30 minutes you can do your daily mindfulness training. What I want you to understand is that mindfulness can only arise when you determine to be mindful. Determine to be mindful is not a craving. Determine means like you make an aspiration. I want to be aware. I want to develop this quality of mindfulness. So you constantly develop self-awareness inside. From inside, when you are aware, then you can start to develop mindfulness and awareness. So you determine to be aware of what? Aware of the four postures that the Buddha mentioned. Aware of anapanasati, to train your mind. Then after that, aware of all your movement, action in the present moment. So when you are aware, you cannot think. That's why when you continuously do this, you will shift over from a heedless way of living to a heedful way of living. So just as I was sharing with my daughter and Danny at the dinner table, sorry, our breakfast table there. How do you develop mindfulness or awareness when you are in your normal activity of life, like having breakfast? When you walk out of here, like from a sitting posture, how I arise? I have to be fully aware. Not to say aware only after I stand up, understand or not? That one, you miss all the activity. Yeah. Then no need to worry about intending to stand up. Where got such thing? Because class over, I need to go down for breakfast or I need to go to toilet, answer nature's call. So that is the one that conditioned me to move. Understand or not? I don't have to have intention to stand, intention to raise, intention to walk. That is not the reality. The reality is another factor decide. Our program is decide. We are going to have breakfast. And if I need to answer nature's call, I need to go. So all these are already within our conditioning. So what I did is, when I want to arise, I just aware that every movement, you realize all my movement before I even stand, I fully aware. Then how I turn, how I move, is body and mind as one. That's it, finish. And when you determine to be aware, you will have more and more moment of awareness or mindfulness. And when you are mindful, you cannot think. He already went through, isn't it? You are either mindful or lost in thought, heedless. That's it. So when you are in a sitting posture or in a relaxed manner, contemplating, reflecting, sometimes you will feel, because you have a physical body with the senses, sometimes feeling arise. Like I spoke to my daughter, I said, weather is very good. Do you understand? Weather is very good, sunny, and the temperature is just nice. Everything is very conducive. So this morning I checked. The weather forecast predict 12 degrees. 14 is not 12. It's just nice. And we went down for chanting. I saw quite a number there. About 7 of them down there. So the vibration, the chanting, everything was very conducive. So everything you come to perceive, you aware. So aware means what? Your feeling. Your emotion or whatever. So when you are aware, you cannot think, understand? So human beings' problem is, most of the time they are not aware. They allow this to condition them into stress, into tension, into heedless living. They are hardly aware, they are hardly silent. Most of the time they think a lot, they worry a lot. Then they are too busy thinking, planning and worrying about life. So much so, they never live. What is living life? Living life is different from existing through life. Understand not? Existing through life means in Hokkien, gong gong tua, gong gong jia, gong gong si. I remember Reverend Suwano always say, everything also gong one, means delusion. Understand not? So when you are heedful, you are not deluded. You don't have the delusion there, understand not? The self-delusion. You are fully aware. You can be with the moment in silent awareness to experience the pristine beauty of the moment, the wonders of life. Everything is so pristine, so beautiful, so wonderful, so full of joy, so full of meaning and understanding. But you have that wisdom, the quality in you. That's why mindfulness can transform you. And your mind that is constantly aware, mindful, got no agitation, got no fear, no worry, no anxiety. Even when you hear something, recall something, most people panic when they hear some bad news or when they recollect something pending, something bad going to happen. Why did they straight away condition them into the state of fear, worry, anxiety. Then they start to develop the panic attack and all those things. Why? Because of ignorant delusion. Because they are hardly mindful, hardly aware. The moment you experience something, you just silence your mind and be with it. Because you got self-awareness. When you are silent and aware, it cannot think, understand or not? Then that thing will slowly, slowly dissipate. Then you realize you return to your original state of mind before the stirring. Before the delusion condition you into fear, worry, anxiety and emotion. Then you realize, why must I do that? That is the wrong thought conditioning my fear, worry, anxiety. And fear, worry, anxiety is not me. It's dependent originating, conditioned by the wrong thought. If I have wisdom, right thought, my life, I decide whether to be peaceful or to be miserable is entirely my choice. True or not? You hold the key to your own life destiny. Don't tell me you are so naive and so stupid as not knowing how to decide that you want to be happy. Can you understand that? If I decide to be happy, I will be happy, isn't it? But why is the world full of unhappy people? You think they don't know how to decide? No, they don't know this Dhamma. They don't understand what is happening to them. So when you understand, it's so easy. It's just like your palm. Flip over the other side, you are free. When you don't understand, it caught you. It's the other side. You always having problem. But the moment you understand, pop, you are free. You have a choice. Real, true or not? Your life, you decide. Don't tell me you don't know how to decide to be happy. Why are you not happy? Why do you hold on to your thought, cling on to your thought, give all the wrong meaning to them and worry about them? Just live. Why can't you live with this Dhamma understanding? The Buddha already taught us. The reality is within the moment. Condition like that, things will be like, cannot be otherwise. Why do you still wanting your way? Why can't you accept the reality first? Then act, move with wisdom, understanding. If you want to arise certain things, you have to plan the causes and conditions. If you want to have the good life, you have to take care of karma. Are you doing that? If you want to be enlightened, you must be mindful, heedful. Are you doing that? It's so simple. If you do that, the Buddha guarantees you enlightenment. And that is what meditation is all about. So simple. So direct. So clear. But you are so conditioned. Because you believe this so-called vipassana is like something very extraordinary. Like very difficult to get. Huh? You have to strive very hard. You have to do all this. The other thing that I want you to always remember is you come to retreat to train your mind to de-stress, to become peaceful, to become mindful, aware and heedful. You don't come here to suffer, understand? You know what is coming here to suffer? I saw a lot of these people who go to other retreats. They are forced to sit, no? Sit until they dare not move. You understand? Then they look around. Nobody move. No? I also cannot move. But actually miserable inside there. There's not pain everywhere. Then the thought keep on disturbing them. And that, to me, is not meditation. You are here to, the first support, relax. Why can't you just relax and let the mind settle down? If you cannot sit and become peaceful, go for a walk, understand? A mindful walk. Do you realize that when you walk quietly, mindfully, especially with the environment here, you feel very good, isn't it? With the breeze, with the air. Then you come back, you are fresh, isn't it? This is so much better than stressing yourself on the meditation cushion without understanding. You understand? And that is what a lot of people are doing. They come here to torture themselves for what? Sometimes they have this wrong thinking, the sense of paisaya. And they not dare not make noise. Sometimes cough also panic. Sorry, I don't mean it. Then want to release nature's gas, also dare not release. No. Paiseh, let people hear, you no manners. Why are you doing all this? I'm not asking you to purposely release and make people embarrassed. Because some people are still conditioned. But these are nature's process. You think you are the only person who fart? The whole world, everybody fart. And how many times they fart? It's only that they do it quietly. So if you can control, you can manage it, then manage it. But if it's a nature's thing, especially after you transform, after your meditation progress, I can tell you, you fart a lot. The gas that come out non-stop, sometimes within one firing, can be hundreds of shots. But don't worry, no smell. Because this is different. Yes. Use the mic. This one. But you all need to meditate. I can only allow you half an hour. Okay. Can. Another 30 minutes. Never mind. Ask down.
No, back to the earlier reflection, yes, that you say that why do we go against nature's way?
Yeah.
And there's always a reminder by you that people are the way they are.
Yes. Yeah.
And why do you need to go against that?
Yeah.
Okay. So let's take a scenario where you want it this way. You want it way.
Yeah.
But that person want B way.
Yeah.
But for the A to get her way, she needs to comply. She needs B to approve it.
Okay. Fair enough.
So, but now B is not approving it. So do you, as a practicing Dharma, do you allow B to win all the time? Or you just, accept now?
Okay, good. Thank you for the question. I will answer you. You see, that's why I say the Dharma is alive. It's a living Dharma. And wisdom is the full picture. Not just fragmented. That's why when you come to living life, it's a totally different scenario. And you think this way, well, your thought conditions you to think this way. You always say, I want it the A way. But I married. I got a husband who doesn't like my A way. He like B way. So what are you going to do? Now I ask you, what are you going to do? How can you resolve this using the Dhamma understanding that you have? Like you say, I give you a guide, he is the way he is. Understand? So, what are you going to do? First is accept him for what he is, isn't it? Then, after that, doesn't mean you agree with what he do, no? So, how are you going to resolve it? Why you want it your way? You have to look at it and ask yourself, are you being fair? Is he being fair? Does it lead to suffering, misery, conflict, misunderstanding? If it leads to that, then it's karmic negativity. Okay, understand?
I give it a more precise example. I just say, for example, this retreat.
Yeah.
I apply leave 1 year ago.
He doesn't want to approve.
No, not my husband. Husband doesn't do that.
Your boss.
My boss. I follow Dharma way. I write very nice love letters to her.
Oh, okay.
I explain to her why I need to go. I explain to her, I'm giving you 1 year notice from 2018 right until now.
So finally he approved or not? She approved or not?
She approved it very much.
Reluctantly.
A lot of bad feelings.
Reluctantly.
Also happened that Friday I come, Thursday got emergency in the university. So I can see from her WhatsApp. Hey, you see, you take leave. You see, now got emergency.
Never mind. No need to react. Why must you react? She is the way she is.
Correct lah, but that you mean
selfish, have that delusion. That's why she wanted her way. She will write all those things. The best is off your phone. Then when you go back, I'm on retreat. My phone is supposed to be off.
Yeah. So of course now that you say projection, so I'm thinking if I'm gonna come in 2020, I probably have to come out with another ton of
No need. Aiyo. You don't understand the condition for you to go to retreat. When I was working as a civil engineer, I got a lot of responsibility. I got a lot. They call my workplace a madhouse. And every time I want to go spiritual trip, retreat or what, I got no problem. But I radiate love and metta to everyone. Everyone is very nice to me. And they respect me. When I apply for leave, they will approve. No question asked. But all the things I resolve for them. Understand? When they need me, I am there and they know I'm very useful and very efficient. And everything that comes to me, that's why I become the problem solver. Sometimes nothing to do with my department also, they come and consult me. When I come out, private sector also same. Well, when you know how to resolve issue amicably and turn it around and become so beautiful and help them save money and make a lot of money, what do you think they will do to you? They will treat you like topek gong, understand? Understand? Yeah, they know you are very good. Then every time they need something, they know Mr. Teo very important. That's why every year, you ask my wife that time I was working there, dinner, annual dinner, sometimes I cannot attend also, too many. All the department, colleges, everything, they sure my name is there. One. They call it, don't know, VIP or don't know what. They will sure have to invite me on. Then a lot of things will happen. Because I resolve issues. I don't argue with people. I don't fight with people. I don't challenge people. I talk to people nicely. Then I am very clear about whose scope and whose duty. Then when I implement project also, I respect them. I say, this belongs to your faculty, this project. So you are like the owner. I am like your advisor. We have consultant. So I will coordinate the client consultant meeting. Then I will ask the owner to come out with their project requirement. Means owner's requirement. So from there, I will write to the consultant and I tell the consultant, this is what the owner wants. If you got any better suggestion or any objection to any of this, you let me know, then I coordinate for you. That's why they feel very good, because somebody who understands, who can do all this. And there is always love. The atmosphere is very, very beautiful. Yeah. And it ends up with good understanding, harmony. So you can develop that. You don't go and allow your thought to perceive that guy with negativity, yeah, the she on top of you. She like that one. Then you are being conditioned. That negative thought will create the condition for her to continue to don't like you. Understand? Because all this is your vibration, your understanding. When you have love, when you have kindness, when you have understanding, all this vibration will go through. Then they will see the change in you. That you are different. Yeah. That's why that day Lee Huynh came and told me, you all got another friend who's supposed to come, but she hasn't come before. And Lee Huynh told me, I don't know, you better check with Lee Huynh who that lady is, your friend, one of your friends. Then she told me, actually, Bertil, my friend told me she can see the change in her, Lee Huynh, and you. That's why because of that she got interested, want to come. Then Lee Huynh asked for permission to send the WhatsApp link and all those things. I say no problem, even the website. You can introduce to her and let her listen. That's why you must change. When you change, they will feel it. Well, they are your friend. Now you have to change so that your boss feel it. Not challenge. Not challenge. When you don't understand, it's a challenge. When you understand, no problem, actually. It's so simple. Simple in the sense that when you understand, your mind state is different. You cannot have negativity of mind state. You cannot want to argue and all say, and you cannot say, how can she be so unreasonable? That thought is wrong thought. It will give rise to what? Misunderstanding, conflict, argument. So why can't I accept her for what she is? Then I'm at peace. Then I radiate love and metta. May she be well and happy. Ayo. Accept doesn't mean you agree with her, understand? No, no need. No need. You just write to her sincerely. Yeah? You say, under the employment, yeah? I'm entitled. Wait. No need to argue one. You just write nicely to her. I understand your concern. Huh? But there is no such thing as indispensable, understand? No. It doesn't mean that if I'm not around, your whole department closed down. Then, you are my boss, no. If you cannot handle, you expect me to handle. Cannot. So when I go on leave, if I have notified you with another notice, I hope you understand. Then, with love, always forget hun. I would appreciate it a lot if you can really allow me to go to this. Because this is spiritual, something very important. Maybe I go there, I develop ability to become awakened, enlightened. I come back, I can help you. I can improve the whole of the university's department. That win-win situation, why not? Should extend my leave. No, after you change, your boss will change. Oh, very good. Then you talk to him on Catholic. You say, I really respect you because you have faith in your Almighty God. That one, if he can transform you into a better person, less anger, less hatred, less like authoritative, then maybe I will try to find out more about Christianity. I would like to, but with your character, I don't think I will ever get interested in Christianity. Because I have to see God's love. I'm not seeing it. God's compassion, God's kindness. Because he said God loves all his creation. All beings are born in the image of God. So all this is something that the spiritual quality must be in that practitioner. If they cannot deliver this and reflect this, then that so-called teaching, maybe not the teaching, it's the person learning it, haven't got the understanding. Okay? But the more important one is, 9:30, I just summarize a bit. Let's say you got a very sticky situation your husband don't like. You haven't met them. I have seen couples. The husband don't like their wife to go on all this. And they give them ultimatum. You go to Brother Theo's class, our relationship finished. The type of ultimatum. And it's one of our kaya metta. And I taught her how to resolve it. And it got resolved. Then finally, the husband not only allow her to come, now completely free to come. Brother class, okay, go. Then when Sui An messaged her after that trip, come back, the last one already, then he said, you go, after that you cannot attend the class anymore. So the compromise was there, So she, like you, back, then managed to go. Then when they was in Thailand, the spiritual trip, I remember when he came and talked to me. Say, Brother, I'm happy and yet I'm sad. Why? Happy because my husband let me come. sad because this is the last trip. After that, I cannot attend your class. All the conditions apply. Oh, is it very easy? Forget about your husband first. Enjoy the spiritual trip first. Then develop noble eightfold path. Then write good message. Yeah, thank him for the understanding, for allowing you to come. Then a few days later, reply, oh, really, thank you so much. It was really a beautiful trip. Without your consent, without your approval, I will not be able to have all this. So all these beautiful things, and the husband, of course, feel very good, of course. And the son, oh, my wife now appreciates, you know, every day once at me, give me good messages. You know. Last time, where I got such thing on? Every day argue on your fight. So after that, when she went back, she was so surprised. I told her, first thing you go home when you see him, you hug him. Thank you, darling. Really, this trip meant so much to me and you gave me the consent. I really would like to thank you from the bottom of my heart. And I really love you. Then after that, you know what happened? The next morning, go for breakfast. He received an SMS, Thursday class, from Sui Anno. Tomorrow class. And she was so frightened, she off her phone. Then the husband knew. Why? Want to go to the class? Ask the wife. And the wife say, can I? You want to go? Go lah. She was so relieved. Then she came to the class, she told me, Sui An also know her. I tell you, this beautiful thing can happen. And it can happen to you, understand or not? Then, to resolve everything amicably for marriage life, the best is you have the understanding. We are married because we have the sincerity to enter into this marriage contract, understand or not? I really love you, you really love me. So, this trust is very important. When I trust you, you trust me because we are sincere. Okay? So now, we are no longer living alone. We are together as a family unit. We live our life. So the concept is, two is better than one, understand now? To help out in various ways. Whatever you are good at, you do. Whatever I'm good at, I do. Then if you need my advice, I advise you. If I need your advice, you advise me. But we must be clear. My career, my side, my parent or what, I decide. You can advise me. Your career, your money, your that side, you decide. But you need my advice, I can advise you. Like that, no argument. Then you say, wow, this wife very good. No, he can manage the family unit so well. No? I tell you, they can see it. Then they know, wow, this one, very good wife. Must not let go. People practice letting go, don't want to attach. But your husband, when he know you are so good, cannot afford to let you go. He said, Kehun, please, don't leave me. Then inside their heart, they really rejoice because they see the change in you. So this is how you handle life and become different. Okay, meditation, start now. Otherwise, too much of this. No, the first session before 19, okay, we can have more Dhamma. Because there are some who are new and there are some who are old who may want to develop the understanding further. But after 19, noble silence, cultivation, heedfulness, mindfulness. Okay, we are off the light. Then you can go ahead with your meditation. I have given you all the instruction. Then those who need to read up, you can read up on your own, the blue book. Okay. Yeah. So I will set the alarm now, at exactly 10:30. Yeah, 10:30, about 55 minutes. I will ring the bell. Okay. Always remember, relax, silence your mind. Aware means silent. Don't do anything. Let the thought arise. Let it pass away. you don't feed it with any more thought energy, it will slow down and it will cease. Then you will be able to realize your true mind, the tranquility and stillness of mind, the original mind. Just relax, silent, and enjoy your meditation. Because within that peacefulness, that calmness, the tranquility, the stillness, there is so much peace, so much calmness, so much joy. And your energy flow, because there is no constriction. There is just a relaxed state of mindfulness. Yeah. That's what meditation is all about. It makes you calm, it makes you peaceful, it makes you tranquil, makes you still. Yeah. Remember to relax. The thought come, let it be. Finally, it will slow down, it will settle down. Yeah. Talk to the thought if you need to. It says, have mercy on me. Yeah. Do not distract me into worrying about other things or thinking about other things. I just want to have this 55 minutes of peaceful meditation. Whatever you want me to think or attend to, I will do it after the meditation. In the meantime, allow me to have the space to develop the meditation. When you talk to the thought like that, it's very easy. Every time the thought come and disturb you, you say, okay, after the meditation. Then you relax again, silent. That's how your meditation can progress. Okay?